movies and stuff, which is sort of weird. So like,
so like your wife Nora's there,
right? Exactly. No, this Scott Adams from not Scott Adams.
Scott Adams from Dilbert. He's a not popular Dilbert. Guy these days. He was,
who's the guy from Parks and Rec?
Chris Pratt.
No, not Chris Pratt. Adam Scott. No, I don't know.
Yeah, Adam Scott.
I don't know. Is that his name?
That's a guy from Parks and Rec.
Yeah, that he was here. I guess he's filming a movie here. Yeah. So like there'll be, you know, there'll be like people, like random people will just like show up here because they'll be filming from the movies. Or
Adam Scott was really mean
to who?
No, that's not his name, is it? Yeah, Adam Scott. He was really mean in Secret Life of Walter Mitty. And I was, and I had not seen Parks and Rec yet at that point. I'm like, oh, he must be like the mean guy on the show. And then I watched the show finally, and I'm like, it's not who he was at all. There really wasn't a mean guy on Parks and Rec.
I never watched that show.
And they kind of set up Nick Offerman's character to be the mean guy, but he had a heart of gold. And then Aziz Ansari's character was supposed to be the douchey guy, but he also, like, everybody had a heart of gold, so nobody was really mean. There was no Dwight Schrute.
Yeah. I'm seeing an awful lot of these promos for this TBS show, that People of Earth, from the people who did Parks and Rec. I can't tell if that's
going to
be
the alien abduction show. Yeah, I keep seeing those on the games. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if that's
I can't tell either.
Here's another commercial that I can't stand. I can't stand the, well, anything Geico I can't stand, but
Proposition 61.
No, they don't have it.
Some guy out in Louisiana said he was getting the Prop 61 commercials on Fox Sports 1 where he lives. I'm like, really? He's like, that's weird. DirecTV. I'm like, that's weird. You shouldn't be getting that.
No, the Matthew McConaughey one. Where he falls into the Lincoln ones.
Oh,
where he
I didn't
falls
drive
into
it to be cool.
It's like that, yeah.
Because I liked it. Long before they paid me, I drove a Lincoln. I didn't do it to be cool.
Yeah, I have a problem with Geico commercials because they don't. Being a former advertiser and knowing how, like, you know, it just makes me so mad.
I thought you were gonna say being a former lizard.
No, like, you know, I'm like, how? First off, what is their budget to have all these different, you know, concurrently running campaigns?
Yeah, right. No, I've noticed that too. We're like, wait a minute. I thought you were the lizard people, but you're also the caveman.
Well, they
people,
do have the lizard people.
The yeah.
Iced tea person. Yeah, then they have these really, really well executed, you know, high production value things that it's like, wow, that's a lot of money to spend.
Hello, Darren Kitchen.
Hello, Tom Merritt.
We are live on Alpha Geek Radio, audio only.
Thank you.
So that amazing prototype behind you is not visible to the audience.
Oh, did I leave it out again?
Sure.
Yeah. Oh, funny that you should mention that. The factory is literally just calling me right now.
Oh, they're like, stop showing that prototype on audio.
That's literally. Let me call you back in an hour, okay? Okay, hit me.
We can kind of hear them.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. It was more of the W. Scott is one in our chat. Len, you don't want to save 15% or more on car insurance?
Marco Polio. No, the one that gets me is the one where it's Prince Charming coming to kiss the girl.
Oh,
and
Chris,
she doesn't wait.
No way. Yeah.
She doesn't wake up, and then have you seen that one?
Yeah, I forget they're for Geico though, because there are so many different campaigns.
Well, what kills me is that if you want someone to leave you alone, you pretend you're sleeping. It's what you do. I'm like, really?
It's
that's what you do.
My cat figured it out now that I'm. Just
I don't think Hangout has your right mic, by the way, Darren. Okay.
Appreciate it. No.
No, not working. Control when you get a chance.
I gave you control.
Oh, did you?
And how's that?
How much more do you? Oh, yeah, there we go. That's the stuff.
Sorry about that, guys.
All right, starting the video up.
Okay.
I'm going to assume that the stories I put in top stories
Right.
It's what you do.
Good. It's what you do.
If you want to start the video streaming, you press start broadcast.
You start the broadcast. It's what you do. If you want to save big on car insurance, you go to Geico.
Daily Tech News Show not sponsored by Geico.
I mean, as a former advertising writer, it burns me up because I'm like, that's such a lazy writing. You know, like.
It works, though.
Does it? I hate it. You didn't even remember it was for Geico.
No, you're right. Maybe it doesn't work.
That's the big thing.
Yeah.
You know, like I'll see these commercials and I think about these, and it's so funny now to think about it because it's like I think about these junior writers writing this stuff. And I used to be a junior writer, but I thought when I was a junior writer, I worked a little bit harder on my concepts. And
everyone thinks that. About you particularly.
Oh, yes. I thought you were saying everybody feels that they had
that
stronger concepts when they were younger. Oh, no, that's true. I'm sure everybody thinks that their concepts were
better. But halfway through saying it, I was like, it's funnier if I'm like, no, everyone thinks that about you. I hear that from everyone.
Yeah.
You know, Len really did work a lot.
Peralta had such strong concepts. His concepts were impeccable. It's a wonder why he never went to BBDO. I just don't know why he never got picked up by Chris.
Madman Darren.
Yeah.
Or Len Peralta. So, Darren, are you ready?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, let's do this.
All right. Let's roll.
Ooh, it's already 4:30.
Here we go.
Daily Tech News Show is powered by its audience, not outside organizations. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support.
This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, October 21st, 2016. I'm Tom Merritt. Back. I wasn't here last Friday, but I am now. Darren Kitchen, back. He wasn't here last Friday, but he is now. How's it going, Darren Kitchen?
Hey, it goes well. I heard Shannon held down the fort and that we're all still here and that the internet is still ticking and that everything is running smoothly as it should be.
Actually, our main story today is about how there's a DNS DDoS happening and a lot of people can't get to Twitter and they're really mad.
Ah, dang it. Thanks, Obama.
Yeah. What are the presidential candidates going to do if they can't snipe at each other over Twitter?
I don't know. Make more jokes about Russian hackers.
Len Peralta is here to illustrate the concept of a denial of service attack on a domain name system intermediary.
Bring it. Bring it. I'm telling you. I will take it on.
We
anything.
Just keep
I
raising
take
the bar on you, Len.
There you go. There you go. Yes, coming off a big Indians win here in Cleveland. We're enjoying the World Series coming up next week. And I'm ready to draw a DDoS attack.
Best of luck to the Cleveland Spiders in their World Series appearance.
There you go.
I'm a fan. I'll be supporting you, I'm sure. We are going to talk. Darren's going to explain to us what's going on with the denial of service tech against DNS and maybe a little bit about the differences between that on a website in particular and how this one sort of widely impacts domain names. But let's start off with some top stories. Microsoft announced it earned 76 cents a share in Q3 on revenue of $22.33 billion. That's both on an adjusted basis. Analysts had only expected 68 cents a share, so they smashed that, and only revenue of $21.7 billion, so they beat that as well. It was mostly on cloud and office. Office commercial revenue rose 5%. Office consumer revenue rose 8%. The Intelligent Cloud is what they're calling the division with Azure, jumped 8%. Azure itself skyrocketed up 116% year over year, and server revenue's up 11%. Revenue from the good old personal computing division did not do so well. It fell 2% on the year, but don't blame the Surface. It was the phone revenue that plummeted 72%. Surface revenue up 38%. From $672 million to $926 million. All right, Mr. Microskeptic, what do you make of these numbers?
Oh, man, I'm so proud of them. Hey, Microsoft, you should print out that earnings report and put it on the refrigerator.
Put it on the Microsoft fridge in Redmond.
Right? Yeah. The connected IoT Microsoft fridge. You get two scoops. I say two scoops, Microsoft. I'm proud of you. And you're living up to my expectations of what you should be doing, which is, you know, building consumer confidence and cloud infrastructure and all that other good stuff that's going to benefit mankind. I'm serious.
I'm waiting for that other shoe to drop. Like, that just sounds like you're pleased for Microsoft. I mean,
it's good. It's good for the entire industry when Microsoft does well.
Yeah. And I think what's really interesting here is that a lot of people have been skeptical about the Surface. Microsoft has spun the numbers really hard, but they generally have been improving. And this time they improved significantly to the point that, and I think this is going a little too far, some people are saying, ah, it's the downfall of the iPad and the Surface Ascendant. I think there's actually room for both. I think they have slightly different customers, but it certainly does show that it wasn't an iPad-dominated tablet industry, that someone can come in and make some noise, and Microsoft's doing it.
I'm on my first ever Surface right now, and I'm loving the hardware, and I'm loving seeing, you know, other companies like Google get into the hardware business and say like, hey, we make great software, you know, just like Microsoft, like let's integrate our own thing. And I'm looking forward to the next one. Yeah. So good on you, Microsoft.
And the bad news for Microsoft here is something they expected. I mean, Satya Nadella has been getting them out of the phone business, essentially. It doesn't mean they won't go back into it in some way, but he has been extricating themselves from Windows Phone and Nokia acquisition. And so this is not a surprise to see that kind of weighing them down, but it didn't weigh them down so much that the company as a whole didn't do well.
Yeah, I'd also say that we're still in the early infancy of the smartphone. It may seem like it's a mature technology right now, just because of the speed of the growth, but you know, it's a long game, and Microsoft's been playing this game for the longest time, and we've seen, you know, they're good with flops. They're like, hey, you know, Windows Pen Edition or whatever it was called, Windows CE, Pocket PC, let's just keep iterating. I mean, Microsoft made the kin.
Yeah.
And they're still around. Yeah. So there you go. I believe that they're just going to stick with it. They're just going to keep beating that drum, and eventually they're going to get it. And then they're going to get three scoops. They deserve it.
I now that you say that, it makes me think, if I were Satya Nadella, I would be doing exactly what he's doing, extricating himself from a bloated phone effort, at the same time telling researchers, get ahead. It's going to be hard for Google to innovate. It's going to be hard for Apple to innovate. It's going to be hard for Huawei and ZTE and Xiaomi to innovate. Let's just jump ahead of them. Scrap everything. There's no constraints anymore. What would the next generation of a handheld smart device look like? I'm not saying whether they'll do it or not, but that's what I'd be doing.
See, Sasha, it's going to be a rocky road, but at the end of it, rocky road.
I scream when you make those puns. I really do. Facebook will launch an international ad campaign starting Sunday night in the UK and then international, spreading worldwide, to promote Facebook Live. While the service was launched with exclusive access for celebrities, the ads will feature videos from average users. The first phase will be 15-second ads, all starting with the countdown used by Facebook Live. And then on Monday, November 7th, the second phase will release, showing how to go live in three easy steps. That only will not only be video ads, but also billboards and bus stops with step-by-step lists on them.
Yay! Is the live novelty going to wear off here real soon? It used to be such a difficult thing to get going, and now it's just, you kind of take it for granted because it's on every platform, it feels like. And I'm just, you know, wondering if there's going to be some sort of consumer backlash to live. I've already heard, like, you know, my friends, you know, gripe about like, stop it, Facebook. I don't care that some dude I follow is live.
Yeah.
Have you played with it?
I have. In fact, I do an almost weekly Facebook Live stream promoting what we're talking about on DTNS, depending on the day. I'll do it on different days. I honestly use it as more of a like minute to 2 minute long preview and then go away. Maybe I always get Andy Beach. God bless Andy Beach. He always jumps in there and sees me going live. Maybe I'll get a handful of other people. But I don't use it to stream the way most people do. And I think that's what Facebook is betting on, is that they can take it from the novelty meerkat Periscope world and make it a truly regular phenomenon that they are the major platform for.
Well, I gotta say, Facebook definitely gets two scoops over Google's one scoop, because YouTube, while it had live first, was just so convoluted with the RTMP servers and the edge points and the Wirecast and everything else. Mm-hmm. And while Hangouts is grand and all, I don't think of it the same way that I think of Facebook Live, and it's just so consumer friendly. I have to give a shout out to our very own Sarah here at Hack 5. Who every week sings at the Ivy Room and streams live on Facebook, and it's a really intuitive system.
I have to say, if it were me handing out the scoops, I'd give a scoop to Periscope, maybe. Two scoops to Facebook, scoop to Periscope. I might give Google kale.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you've been to the cafeteria there, you know. You know.
My wife complains that they don't have the cafeteria at her location because she works for YouTube. Bloomberg reports senior executives at AT&T and Time Warner have been meeting to discuss business strategies. One of those strategies would be merging the companies. And the Wall Street Journal shortly thereafter says its sources say the talks are in an advanced stage, so much that a deal could come quickly, even possibly this weekend, although I find that pretty unlikely. AT&T owns DirecTV but does not own a major content producer. DirecTV produces a little bit of content, but not like whereas Comcast owns NBC Universal. The AT&T acquiring Time Warner would be along those lines.
Yeah, I'd love to see the Death Star just soaking up more and more. You know, they should get themselves a municipal water utility. That'd be nice. So throw that into the repertoire. I mean, okay. What else can AT&T branch into?
Do you want a silver lining to this?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I look at it and I was like, I hate that they own DirecTV and an ISP, and now they're going to own HBO if this goes through.
A content company,
yeah.
Sure.
Here's the silver lining. They get out of the ISP business. This is their exit strategy. And Verizon's doing the same thing by going after Yahoo and AOL. They're saying, you know where the money is? It's in owning the people who make the things for the pipes, not owning the pipes. They've been afraid of dumb pipes. This indicates that they're done trying to make the pipes not be dumb pipes. Maybe they'll sell them off to people who are happy to just treat packets equally.
You would hope. I want to get on that train of optimism that you're on, but I have a feeling that this is just a strategy to become more vertically integrated and, you know, wield the power of the packet to force their content down the consumer's throats at, you know, ungodly prices. And squash the competition, because that's the, you know, when you got the shareholders, that's what you do. So no scoops for you, AT&T.
Sorry, AT&T. You'll be eating the kale over there in the corner with Google. I do want to clarify to people who are, because I see it in the chat room already. Time Warner is HBO, Turner, TBS, CNN, and movies.
It is formerly AOL.
No. It is not AOL.
Formerly.
No. But that's confusing because AOL is owned by Verizon, right? So the Time Warner we're talking about is just the TV and movie stuff. The cable company, Time Warner Cable, no longer exists. It was bought by Charter, who has merged it with their cable enterprise and changed the name to Spectrum. So we're not talking about AT&T buying Time Warner Cable here.
But when AT&T and Time Warner merged, when AOL and Time Warner merged, that was an ISP and a content creator getting together. So this is, you know, all of this, this is the
all
eternal.
All this has happened again and all of it. Well, yeah, they unmerged though.
Right. So now.
Does that mean AT&T and Time Warner would merge and then eventually split back apart?
I'm trying to remember if this is a clone or do I do a push or a pull?
Well, and don't forget, this Time Warner no longer has the publications. So the magazines that it used to own are now spun off as their own separate company as well.
I don't think that this is something that the FTC would allow to go forward. An ISP to also be
Comcast.
I just feel like
Comcast was allowed to buy NBC Universal.
So it's just the hip thing to do. It's a Me Too move.
Yes. Like, kind
need
of.
To get some content. Yeah.
Verizon went AOL and Yahoo. They want digital properties, which in some ways is smarter, although I'm not sure the particular digital properties they're going after are the smartest, but that's where they're going. Whereas what we saw Comcast do was buy a major studio. They had a lot more cash. AT&T have quite as much cash, but they've got a bit, so they might be able to go after Time Warner, but they're not going to be able to go after it with cash. It's going to have to be a stock swap, it sounds like.
I do like the fact that it's content that seems like it's resilient to the economy in this case, where it's these old school, you know, I don't know what's the term for these like old ISPs, telcos that are just like, oh, let's get some of that content, that new hip stuff that's like evergreen.
Yeah.
Right?
But it's your heritage company, your old school company. Yeah. Yeah. I hear you.
It's not your grandfather's AT&T.
No, it's not. It ain't Ma Bell, that's for sure. All right. According to a Thursday court filing in the case against NSA contractor Thomas Martin III, he is a Booz Allen Hamilton contractor who worked with the NSA, investigators have seized 50 terabytes of data. some of which they say is national defense information. Now, they're trying to imply that all 50 terabytes is, but that is not actually stipulated. Prosecutors said Martin would soon be charged with violations of the Espionage Act. That is no joke. The Espionage Act can carry the death penalty. The new filing indicates that Martin took six banker's boxes full of paper documents marked secret or top secret, dating from 1996 through 2016. New York Times reported Wednesday, however, that investigators have yet to connect Martin to the shadow broker's dump of NSA exploits. A lot of people jumped to the conclusion that he must be one of the guys that leaked these exploits, and investigators are not able to connect those dots yet. In a late Thursday evening court filing, Martin's defense team asked for him to be released on bail, saying there is no evidence he intended to betray his country. He doesn't own a passport. He's got a wife and a house. He is not a flight risk. And of course, the state saying he is a flight risk. He needs to be kept behind bars.
Yeah, this is a really weird one because on the one hand, I'm just like, can't fathom the thumb drive he must have had and or cargo pants to walk out of the NSA with 50 terabytes.
Yeah.
I either want the thumb drives that they're not selling to us consumers, or I just want to see his pants.
50 terabyte thumb drives in a bandolier on Halloween.
Yes.
Chewbacca.
That's really, you know what? I want to see hard drive Chewbacca now. Somebody listening at home, let's make that happen.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I think on the one hand, he's touted as an encryption expert and you know, all of these things. And on the other hand, it's like, okay, dude, you like go home with all of this top secret material and then you like leave some of it like in your car. You know, if you're really planning something spooky and clandestine, that just doesn't sound like something you do unless you're just not very good at this. I don't know. I'm still trying to wrap my head around this. Maybe he was just trying to work from home. You know, telecommuting and the VPN access into the NSA is not so great these days.
Yeah. Well, Nuke Jello points out it was over many years that he accumulated this, which implies to me that he was trying to work from home. That doesn't absolve him, though. Like, you can be starting this working from home and then look around one day and realize two things. One, I don't think what the company I work for is doing is just... And I have a lot of information that could show that. In other words, it doesn't have to be planned from the start. It could be totally non-nefarious why he gets this data home. And then he might or might not then decide to do something with that data that he shouldn't. So far, they're not able to prove that he has been doing that.
Well, here's the way I'm looking at this. Snowden didn't take 50 terabytes. Martin did. The NSA has... Martin, the NSA doesn't have Snowden. If I were Martin, I'd be fearing for my life.
Literally, with the Espionage Act.
Literally, I mean,
that is no joke. He is under threat of his life if he is found guilty of this. Now, getting found guilty of the Espionage Act doesn't guarantee you get the death penalty, but it is certainly something to hold over his head.
Yeah, in today's climate, I'd be spooked out.
Yeah, literally. Speaking of spooky security things, a privilege escalation vulnerability in the Linux kernel, referred to as CVE-2016-5195, it's the 5195 that's worth remembering, appears to be actively and maliciously exploited in the wild. That has got a lot of researchers' attention. It's quite often that we'll find kernel vulnerabilities or other vulnerabilities in all kinds of operating systems because security researchers are looking for them. And that's the way the system is supposed to work. We find it, we fix it, and then it never gets exploited because we fixed it before somebody started taking advantage. This is a kernel bug that they say they see evidence that people are taking advantage of. The bug was patched earlier this week, but existed going back 9 years of Linux kernels. So there are a lot of machines out there vulnerable to it. And of course, it goes without saying, but we're going to say it anyway, administrators of Linux systems are strongly advised to patch those kernels as soon as possible.
Yeah, you know, this is a good thing. This is just an example of the industry working. That's why we have the CVE system. And so it's good. I'm also considering moving to Windows 3.1 because there hasn't been a CVE for that. You know, no vulnerabilities reported in quite a while.
Talk about your security through obscurity.
That, and I miss Trumpet Winsock. So, no. Anyway, get your distro updates.
Yeah, I'm not trying to cause a panic here, but... It I totally agree with Darren. This is how the system is supposed to work, but it is a little extra urgent when they're like, hey, not only did we find this, but we're pretty sure someone's exploiting it out there. So you really, like, you should always fix these things fast, but there's a little extra kick here to make you fix them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just keep the mindset that it's not like a, you know, you never empty the bucket in this case. It's always just like an ongoing battle.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't have to like panic. This is just a normal thing and you just roll with it, right? And it's like, great, squashed another one. How many other 0 days do we not even know exist? I don't know, anywhere between zero and infinity. So, and how many are being actively exploited? Who knows? But, you know, you find them, you fix them, and you move on.
Patch your stuff. Hey, thanks to all those who participate in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. All right, let's talk about that denial of service attack. Here's the timeline. Here's the news. Basically, at 7:10 a.m. Eastern, a distributed denial of service attack was started against Dyn, D-Y-N. It's a company that's been around for a long time. They used to do an open DNS. They used to do some free products. Now they basically provide services to big companies, Twitter, Reddit, Netflix, etc. So when their denial of service attack started to happen, it brought a lot of domain names offline because they couldn't do the redirect. At 9 a.m. Eastern, they resolved it. At 12:04 p.m. Eastern, a new denial of service attack against Dyn began. Now, there's a lot of scuttlebutt around. Officials told Reuters the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the FBI are investigating. Amazon reported a related outage early Friday afternoon. And there's even some posts from Brian Krebs talking about the fact that Doug Midori, director of internet analysis at Dyn, gave a presentation about a company called BackConnect, suggesting that maybe they were spoofing some internet addresses. And, of course, the next day, a DDoS happens against Dyn. Krebs says, hey, I published an article based on research done with Doug Midori of Dyn about BackConnect, and within hours, Krebs on Security was hit by a denial of service attack. Those are coincidences. But Krebs is saying, this is suspicious. You know, I want to make people aware of this. So without getting into whether that is true or not, let's backpedal a little for the people who are like, that was word salad. I don't understand. What is DNS? Darren, can you explain domain name system to people who don't
know? Sure. Really simple phone book that your computer uses to figure out what the website number is, its IP address, because you can't remember 66.33.210.111, but you can remember Darren.kitchen. And so when your computer is like, hey, I want to go to Darren.kitchen, it checks this little server that typically your internet service provider operates called a DNS server. And it says, yo, can I get the IP address of that so that it can find its way over to my awesome website and see my sweet little ANSI graphics? And if it doesn't know the answer, then it'll check the next one up and the next DNS server up in the chain. And if that one doesn't have it, it goes all the way to the root servers. And there's 13 of these massive phone books of the internet. And they all get disseminated and cached with the information down to the edges to us so that, you know, we can just make these simple requests and say, hey, what's the IP address? And for the majority of our simple websites, we have one IP address. Like Darren.kitchen has one IP address, that one that I mentioned. And it's not a very complex site, and I don't have many visitors, so I don't have to worry about things like load balancing and round robin and all of these other techniques that are used when you are a giant website like Spotify or GitHub or Twitter. Those guys have way more than just one server hosting up their stuff. And so they end up having to go with a DNS provider that offers ways of load balancing and other really cool intelligent techniques of managing DNS requests so that, you know, when they're being hit from, you know, when requests are coming in from all over the world, that they can manage those and most effectively get them to the servers that are closest to them or have the right information or aren't getting bogged down.
Okay, so let me try to sum up for people for just a second. So you've got, I want to go to twitter.com. There's a box somewhere that says, hey, you're saying you want to go to twitter.com. Well, it says here in my little file that that's, you know, 62.103.58.7. So let me just send you on your way because now we know what computer you're after. And then if you're twitter.com, you don't just have one number because you have so many people coming to twitter.com. You've got loads of numbers and you may change them all the time. And they may change depending on what region the request is coming in. Is that roughly sum up? What you're talking about?
Yeah, that sums it up. It's called load balancing.
So what is a distributed denial of service attack then?
Ah, sure. That's like if I were to poke you, Tom, and I were to say, hey, Tom, what's your IP address? And you'd give me that IP address. And I'd say
127.001.
Yeah, and I'd poke you again, and I'd say the same thing, except instead of just me poking you over and over again, imagine you're getting poked by the entire DTNS audience, and we're all just poking you all at once, and you can't handle it. You're only one guy. So
yeah, I can't respond to all of you people, and it hurts. Stop poking me.
Right? I think they took that feature out of Facebook. I'm not even sure now. So anyway, that would be a distributed denial of service attack if you just got too many pokes to be able to respond to them all.
Yeah. So the server is trying, or servers, even in Twitter's case, are trying to answer the questions, but it can't because there's just too many questions coming in. Why is it distributed, though?
So the idea is, if I was just one lone hacker in my basement and I was, you know, doing a denial of service attack on you, all of that, all of my questions would be coming from me, from my one IP address. And so for you to just be like, wow, there's this really annoying guy that keeps poking me, you just block me at the firewall and be like, cool, all your packets on the floor. And then that would be it. So a distributed denial of service attack would be if I were, say, a botnet master, and I had loads of machines all over the internet, these zombies that I command, and I could have them all poke you. And now suddenly you're being hit from every angle, and it makes it a lot harder to tell, you know, what's legitimate, what's not, and then to shut it all down.
So what does a company like Dyn do? And I know this goes back to when we were talking about, hey, if you're Twitter, you need lots of different servers and lots of different numbers.
Yeah, that's essentially what they do. Is, you know, there's a lot of different DNS providers out there, and you know, the simple ones will literally just, you know, they run a name server where if you look up the A record for this IP address, it'll give you back, or the A record for this website, this DNS name like internetspiritguide.com, it'll give you back the IP address. But if you're a big company, you're going to have multiple servers and you're going to need load balancing and you're going to need a lot more complexity. And so you end up going with a big company like DYN or Dyn. And there's many of these companies out there that offer these services. And typically the way that it's actually built, the way the DNS is built, is because back in the day of the internet, I mean, it was, you know, somebody lets some server somewhere go down and then suddenly half the Eastern Seaboard can't connect to anything. So there was redundancy put in place. Typically, you have more than one name server. You'll have like NS1 dot whatever and NS2 dot whatever. And so you'll actually have like lots of redundancy in there, giving you that ability to distribute your DNS solution so that when, you know, people try to get your IP address, they'll like go here and ask this one server. And if it doesn't get a response, then it'll just go to the next one and go to the next one. What happens, though, is for these really big websites, they end up kind of getting locked into a single vendor because that vendor offers them such a complex solution, and it's not really viable for them to go to multiple providers to get all of those different things. So you may hit, you know, it might be NS1.DynDNS, and it's like, oh, overloaded. So it'll go to the next one, NS2.DynDNS. You see where this is going. NS3.DynDNS. And so if there was a more effective way to distribute the load, then this probably wouldn't have been an issue. But it's a difficult problem for engineers to solve. And so you kind of end up just going with one vendor and hoping for the best.
So Dyn came in to these companies and said, look, it's really complex to manage all of these IP addresses and all your servers and load balance everything. We'll do that for you. And what this denial of service attack did was say, hey, guess what? All these companies are hosted on Dyn. If we just deny service to Dyn, then you'd have to know the IP address to get to these domain names. Or maybe some of them are also hosted somewhere else, but it's certainly going to slow them down. Why would you do that, though? Is it for the lulz, or is it you're wanting to get one of these sites down and you just don't care that the others go down? Yeah. I mean, what are some of the reasons someone would DDoS a DNS provider like that?
Well, the typical reason for like a DDoS, and we've talked about this on the show before, is usually there's like some sort of extortion ploy where it's like, oh, great, I'm going to use this technique, you know, using this DDoS to take down your website, not necessarily your DNS, but your actual, the servers running your website. And then I'll shake you down for some money and say, hey, that hurt, didn't it? Well, pay us some money and we won't do it again. And you'll get some protection. You know, it'd be a shame if something happened to your sweet little web server over there. So, this, on the other hand, is like an attack not on the actual servers of Twitter or Spotify or GitHub, but rather on the phone book that they all happen to share. And so I can't really speculate on what the motivation behind this is, because we haven't seen any sort of extortion or anything like that come out. I mean, you know, one would say hacker's going to hack. I mean, it could literally be for the lulz. It could be a test run of a botnet to see how effective it is. Either way, it has definitely made a disruption. And this is a good thing, because it has people thinking about, wait a second, the internet, that fragile, that like you take down one service provider and suddenly we can't get to Twitter or GitHub. It's not that Twitter or GitHub's websites went down. They're up. You just don't know the IP address of them anymore.
Yeah. And I think the other thing to keep in mind is the capability to send enough traffic to bring down Dyn is a lot. I mean, this is not a company that only has, you know, 100 megabit per second connections. They are built to withstand denial of service attack. This isn't the first denial of service attack Dyn's been under, but they know how to mitigate them. This is just the biggest one they've ever been under, and that's why it's starting to overwhelm their defense mechanisms. We don't know this for sure, but certainly one of the things that gives denial of service attacks more bandwidth is the proliferation of devices. And we've talked about, you know, the Internet of Things, particularly, and webcams and DVRs and routers and everything getting infected with bots that can then conduct these sort of attacks.
Right. And so for every additional node on the internet, for every new device that has smarts and can connect to it, that's one more device that can be potentially compromised and turned into a zombie in a botnet. And when it comes to Internet of Things, you have massive proliferation of devices that are entering the network that may not necessarily have security as the first order, and may not necessarily get updates when security vulnerabilities are found. We've talked about it numerous times before about Internet of Things devices sharing, you know, the same root password or the same private keys and things of that nature, and these discoveries being found, but you don't see vendors being quick to react to that. And even if they were to be quick to react to that and come out with firmware updates or whatever it takes to secure these and lock them down, it's still falling on consumers to actually go and update them when nobody's doing that. So, you know, why is Twitter down? I don't know. A lot of doorbells are ringing and sending packets from all over the world. It's a fun problem. And, you know, I think one of the things that's not being mentioned here that really needs to get looked at is the fact that this emphasizes the unfortunate centralization of the internet that mm-hmm. we're living in right now. And while, okay, great, yeah, it's DNS. We've got 13 root servers and then a bajillion other DNS servers, right? It's still really fragile when you compare it to some of the newer technologies like the blockchain. Namecoin, for example, is a Bitcoin blockchain technology using service that provides provides DNS-like stuff and their own TLD.bit. And that's, I'm not saying the perfect solution, but I'm saying that is, if the whole world were running on that, we wouldn't be having this problem today, because we wouldn't have to go upstream to a DNS server to find out the IP address of something, because it would literally already be on our hard drive. We would have it on our computer. We would already know. So I think that a more distributed DNS system should be the way to go forward.
Yeah, a distributed assurance of service attack.
Oh, I like what you did there.
I think that's kind of what you want to take out of this, is we need to decentralize the DNS more, as well as many other things, as Darren pointed out, and we need to secure our devices, especially our small devices and sensors and Internet of Things devices. That's the lesson of today that I believe the internet should learn, if the internet was going to learn anything.
Yeah, this won't be the last major DDoS that we see. But it's a fun one, and hopefully it'll get people talking about, hey, let's why don't we implement some distributed technologies to solve this?
All right, let's get to three messages of the day. First from Jason, who has a company that makes solar power for drones that can extend battery power all day long. He writes, in response to our discussion of hydrogen fuel cells last week, "We see the next markets to enter be wearables and Internet of Things because charging hurts customer stickiness and allow devices to be really disconnected. We can't really keep up entirely with a smartphone, but we see a large value add in the wearable space being able to maintain charge on lower power draw devices with just a half an hour outside or Internet of Things devices indefinitely on indoor light."
Hey, that's some really exciting technology. And the reason that I'm most interested in it is because of, you know, if you've seen, I don't even remember the name of the movie now, Sandra Bullock, but the Kessler syndrome, if you're familiar with that, the idea that when eventually all of the satellites in our orbit end up smashing into each other and just creating this nasty cloud of dust orbiting the Earth, preventing us from leaving this rock, will also prevent us from having awesome satellites for GPS and television and things of that nature. And it could potentially lead to a future where it's atmospheric satellites, aka drones, flying around autonomously at 60,000 feet, that will be the new satellites. And that's the kind of stuff that needs that solar charging technology.
Joe, the other pilot, he wants me to call him the other pilot because he is stunned at how many pilots are actually in the audience. He's like, "I'm not the only pilot." The basketball thing that he's talking about, the NBA broadcasting in VR, holds no interest for me. But if you could get the NFL in VR and I could pick my Patriots in-house announcers, the wife and I would save up for that. We have a kid and the wife loves the Seahawks, so this would work for my family as NFC division plays the AFC division on a once every 4-year rotation and only once a year. Minus the Super Bowl, we'd be in good shape. Go Pats! Roger Goodell and Indy and their Deflategate crap can kiss our four rings. I'd say more, but I'd be going on for pages.
I don't know. Yeah, it's a bright new future when it comes to VR.
And then finally, we got an email that said, during the discussion of Google's Coldline announcement, Tom said he really wanted the system to function the way Patrick imagined it, with robots fetching the tapes. We were joking around, and Patrick is like, "What, do robots and go and get the tape out of cold storage for you when it's time for you to view your cold storage data?" Well, this writer wanted to pass on that a system like that exists, or rather it did, back in the days of videotape playback. He says, "I work at a station that used to have a massive machine made by Sony called the LMS, Library Management System. The machine had a stack of 8 Betacam machines on the left and then stacks and stacks of tape slots to the right. Each tape had a commercial or a show on it. You'd check tapes in, put a barcode on the back, and when that show or commercial was needed, a robotic arm would zip over, grab the tape, then zip back to a deck and load it in. It would do this over and over during a commercial break. It was awesome to watch it fly around, especially when it occasionally dropped a tape." And he sent us a picture of the LMS we'll have in the show notes. He says they varied in size based on storage, maxed out at 1,024 tapes.
Yeah, this is good stuff, and I do believe that this is what we saw in the beginnings of the 1995 movie Hackers. So if you want to see a fun demonstration of that technology, it's cool.
Thank you, Don Potito, who sent us that email and the picture, like I said, that we'll have in the show notes. And that is it for this show. Before we get to Lens Art, Darren Kitchen, thank you very much. Good to have you back. If you want to learn more about the kinds of things that can be hacked, you want to go to hack5.org, hack5.org. Anything in particular to let folks know about this week?
Oh, yeah. So our good friend Snubs got herself certified. And so now she's a ham tech. And Shannon Morse will teach you on this week's episode of Hack 5 how to decode Morse code.
Oh, I've been waiting for 10 years for this.
We've all been waiting for KM6FPP, I mean Shannon Morse, nice, to show us how to use some Linux tools to both encode and decode Morse code.
Shannon decodes Morse.
Right. I mean, if her middle name were Thu, I think we'd all just fall over and die.
All right, Mr. Len Peralta, what did you make of our discussion today?
Yes, you know, at the beginning of the show, I said, bring it on, I can draw DDoS. And, you know, since we're so close to Halloween, I thought I would do something that is a horror show for most people. And losing internet, I think, is very, very scary. So this is this year's kind of Halloween, you know, maybe one of a few Halloween little illustrations. you know, DDoS, this big whole, I mean, drew him as a little Pac-Man. But my favorite thing about this entire thing, which is, it's called The Day the Internet Was Eaten, which is sort of a, you know, kind of a overstatement, is this little thing here. We're talking about dying. Little Reddit guy saying, oh, we're dying.
We're dying over here.
I know that's not exactly the same. You know, I know Dyne is a company.
So
but,
good. No, it's so good.
So good.
I just thought the little Reddit guy saying, oh, we're dying.
I love the monster DDoS eating the East Coast. A little subtle reference there because the Dyne servers are on the East Coast. Well done.
There you go.
You got Spotify. You got Twitter in there. Folks, you have to get this. The day the internet was eaten. Memorialize this day.
Memorialized, yes. 10/21/16, the day the internet was eaten. Now available in my online store. As well as the... DTNS Superfan poster. I just want to mention that again. You can be drawn in to the poster for this year. You can get customized, and I've done a couple so far. They're turning out really, really cool. So just consider it. It's a cool thing. Till the end of the year, you can get it customized. Then anybody that orders the non-customized version gets put into a big pool of people who can be chosen as the representative super fans. So you want to get
be,
in there. Right,
you could be right on Len's annual DTNS poster. And all you have to do is, first of all, go to LenPeraltaStore.com to get yourself a copy of The Day the Internet Was Eaten. and then pick up the DTNS poster and you might be on the poster. So it's, right. There's absolutely really not a single reason you shouldn't go to LenPeraltaStore.com.
Well, there was a reason earlier, which is that Len Peralta Store, like Hack5's Hack Shop, is on Shopify, which
that's
was
right
hit by the Dyne DNS issue. That's been resolved. So
even
now
more you reason to want to get that poster.
That's right. Fight back.
All right. Big thanks to everybody who supports this show directly. It's the only way that we support the show is your direct support at dailytechnewsshow.com/support. The main way is Patreon, patreon.com/DTNS. Big welcome to our newest patron, Prasanna Pereira. Welcome into the fold. All of you other patrons, please just give Prasanna a big welcome. And big thanks to Jason Byers and Bill Nobles, who just raised their pledges to a new reward tier. So they'll be getting some new rewards. We just revamped the reward tier with newsletters and special shows. So go check that out. Patreon.com/DTNS. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern at alphageekradio.com and diamondclub.tv. And our website is dailytechnewsshow.com. Back on Monday with Lamar Wilson. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Oh my gosh, I think I want to name the show The Day the Internet Was Eaten.
There was we're dying. I thought that was pretty
we're
funny.
We're dying over here.
I know it wasn't, you know, I know it's not, it doesn't really fit into the whole narrative because Dyne is a company, but I just thought that was so, like, he could
no,
not.
It, I think it still fit. It still works because they are there on the East Coast and they are Dyne. Literally, it's still true.
What about the internet stops on a dime?
Nice. So good.
That's like the top voted one, right?
Yeah,
now.
It's really good.
That's really good.
Stops on a dime. That's really good.
Read some more of your favorites, Roger, but I'm pretty sure we're going to go with the internet stops on a dime.
The day the internet was poked to death. The Dyne Amic DDoS.
Nice.
The internet is dining out. Hackers are dining in. Dynasty problems. Dynasty problems. DNS says it's dying out there. Find your grandfather's AT&T. 50 terabyte pants.
50 terabyte pants is probably.
Oh my god, I love Poketom.
DTNS, Distributed Trustworthy Name Service.
Nice.
Denial of service.
See, you're in good company with these puns, Len.
Yeah. I should have been checking Showbot here.
Oh, man. Yeah, you know what? I actually want to see a Distributed Trustworthy Name Service, but I don't want... Like, and could you imagine that, like, catches on and then everyone knows, like, oh, yeah, DTNS, the thing that saved the internet. And then we're all here, like, guys.
But we, it's that also the, but the thing that
we took our thing.
NSA has another snow day.
Oh,
that's good.
Clever.
Oh, that poor guy is so getting killed.
He's not going to get killed. He's just going to be buried somewhere. He's
going to be murdered by our government. For
actually, to be honest, it's better to go to jail in a federal prison than it is a state prison.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it'll be cush, but still. Poor guy.
You know what?
Hey, man. Peter Gabriel wrote a song about
literally just trying to work from home because, like, somebody in the cube next to him is, like, playing death metal all day. And he's like, really?
Maybe. He should have read the fine print of his job contract.
Yeah.
I got
poor Booz Allen Hamilton.
Yeah, I got contacted by Booz Allen Hamilton one time to participate in a forum, the online forum, and I was freaked out because I'm like, you guys are contractors with like spooks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not spooks, they're the NSA.
I love those guys. They have the shiniest shoes.
That's love so they can see you in them.
Yes. Yes. Oh, you know, hang on. I didn't get a chance to say this on the show, but regarding the DDoS, all I gotta say is they call me Twitter, they call me Spotify, they call me GitHub. That's not my name server. That's not my name server. That's not my name server. They call me PlayStation. They call me Reddit. They call me SoundCloud. That's not my name server.
Wow, a Ting Ting's reference into the
DNS. Is that like 5 years too late for that, though?
Is it, though? It's never too late.
What other songs do they have? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah. So I take it we've all motioned on the internet stops on the dine.
I'm good with that. Good. Yep.
Yeah.
Dining out diners.
I'm also buying. I am buying the day the internet was eaten right now.
Yeah, me too.
It's the day to remember. By the way, speaking of Edward Snowden, did you know there was a Peter Gabriel wrote a song for
NSA
him?
That's
him. He's. I'm out of it. Hang on a second. Peter Gabriel wrote a song about him for the Snowden movie.
Oh no, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it's called The Veil. It's on Spotify. It's actually a pretty good tune.
Well, you can't listen to it today.
Can listen to it today. Well, if you're on the East Coast, you can. But yeah, it's actually a really good tune. It's called The Veil, and I listened to it. I'm like, I think this is about Edward Snowden. It's pretty obvious that it's about Edward Snowden, but it's a good tune, and it's, you know, so I don't know how many guys can say that they have a song written about them by Peter Gabriel.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, I just ordered sled, so when will I get it?
You will get it next week.
Do you see my order? Did it come up? Why are you sitting here talking? Shouldn't you be packing my order?
Whoa. Oh, yeah, sorry.
Hang on. Sarah in the hack shop is watching right now, and she feels that pain.
Oh, I know. She's like, that ain't funny, Tom. That is not funny.
Where's my order, Tom?
You know what? I was actually playing around with the idea because I'm going to put this comic up on my store, and I was looking for a way to do digital downloads. So I was actually looking at a way to add a digital download option to...
that's a cool idea. Yeah.
There's a Shopify app for that.
Yeah, so you get a little instant gratification.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I was thinking of doing that, pushing the actual physical print up a little bit and then keeping the digital at 10. So, so we'll see how that goes. I want to try it on something else first before I do it.
You know what? I might actually be keen on, I'm sitting next to a gorgeous Super B Epson printer. So I might be a good guinea pig for that.
Yeah. You know, I didn't realize they could do that. I just found that out recently that they could do that. So it's definitely something that I want to consider, especially this is sort of like, oh, I like it. Just go and you can download it and you have it.
Well, and we've been talking about doing some kind of giveaway for digital prints, and that would be a good reason to start that, to promote it.
Be and like, hey. The other thing you do is you use those as a loss leader. You give out a coupon code to get that product for free, and you get the instant gratification. And then they're also there going like, oh, check out all these other DTNS prints.
That no, that's the way we do it. Like on Patreon, we could once a month, we'll take one of Len's digital prints and give them to folks on Patreon, probably at like the $5 level, and then say like, hey, here are the other ones this month. If you want to get those, they're available at Len's store.
Sure, Sure. And you can also become a patron at my store too and get them. There's always,
and then you get always, yeah, you can get them direct by just directly backing.
Yeah. But I do like that idea that I now have the ability to just upload these right after the show, and then you can just, boom, you get it right there.
Yeah.
So I could literally be printing it out in the post show.
You could, that's, you could, right, have it on your wall by the end of the post show.
I could be like holding it up right now.
That's pretty amazing, really. Yeah. When, when you think about it. That really is crazy. So yeah, I might actually try that with the next one.
What I want though is the service where you get the premium delivery, where Len shows up in his in his high school jean jacket and hand delivers it.
I saw you like the jean jacket thing. That was,
dude, love it. I showed up on the show just for the jean jacket. And I didn't get it.
It was awesome. Funny. I found it because my little son was looking for his jacket. I'm like, hey, look, this is my old jean jacket. So I put it on. I'm like, hey, it still fits. This is pretty cool. So I took a picture. Awesome. It looks good.
I'm jealous.
I almost worked for the
wish I had
high school jean jacket.
The denim or the Canadian tuxedo is making a return.
Apparently, yeah. It's not unfashionable anymore.
Yeah.
What, the jean jacket?
The Canadian tuxedo.
I don't even, what is a Canadian tuxedo?
It's when you wear all jacket. Denim.
Yeah.
Well, not when you.
It's not. Well, it used to be more than that. It actually was also like a denim, at least a denim.
Yeah,
style.
I was wearing a chambray shirt and denim, and people are like, "That's pretty Canadian tuxedo, Tom." But now apparently that's okay again.
But don't you need like a Tennessee waterfall with that? You need to wear a Tennessee waterfall.
No,
with
apparently the whole tuxedo thing started out with Bing Crosby.
I really just wish right now that I would be able to turn my head and just show you this huge mullet that had been hiding behind me.
It's also known as the eighth grade.
Like this.
No, you know what would actually be really funny is if you had a man bun. Because you never really turn your hair.
Right. I just have every day. It's another crazy hairstyle.
That should be the end of every.
You're SoCal enough to pull that off.
No, that should be the end of every Daily Tech News show. Is Tom reaches back and then goes like this, and like his hair sort of flows like Fabio.
Dude, it's not that far off from the 1980. I'm sorry. The 88 election. Is it the 88 election? 92 election. The 92 election. I anchored for Channel 2 in Champaign-Urbana. And I had a ponytail at the time, but in the straight on shot, and you can find this, I think, on my Vimeo.com channel, in the straight on shot, I just look like, you know, the hair is kind of pulled back, and then they'd go to the side shot and you'd see like the huge,
huge ponytail.
Yeah.
92
Clinton election.
I don't have anything that the oldest picture I have of Tom and his locks is from 2000. When did you start? At Tech TV way back when?
Yeah, 99.
Can I show that picture?
You have it right there? I mean, yeah, I don't mind if you show it.
I mean, that's what we call a producer, Tom.
Yeah.
Of course you
don't. No kidding.
I'm
not messing around.
If I can. I will.
Roger, roll the tape.
Well, it's not video. It's just a shot of Tom with his hair.
That picture.
Yeah, that picture.
Oh, there. Look at that. That's not so bad.
No, that hair, that's not ponytail picture.
No, but that's you had pretty long locks back then.
You had bangs.
Relative to now, it's a lot shorter. You were like, not crew cut. What do you call it?
I cut my own hair back then.
I would say something. Cool.
No, I think if when I admit that. It basically opens me up to you saying whatever you want.
Like, did you stand in the mirror and just cut it?
Yeah.
Was it a financial thing or was it?
Yeah, it was a financial thing. And this is like right when I started. So I finally was making like legitimate money where I could pay someone to cut my hair, but I hadn't yet. So
I almost thought about getting it. Was it a Flowbee, the one that cuts your hair? But everyone says it's bad because it just actually gets tangled up in your hair and pulls on it.
Flowbee. Oh my gosh.
Thank you. Beatmaster says there should be a law that you cannot be prosecuted for your hairstyles older than 10 years.
You're not being prosecuted for anything. You're being harangued.
I just got my haircut this week. I actually, we finally found a haircut that works. So I'm happy with it.
A haircut that works for America.
Yes. I don't feel like, you know,
Len's head great again.
Trying to. I'm getting to the point where it's like, I might as well just shave my entire head off.
What? Why? Wait, what? Lynn, do you have a link on that? Lynn writes in the chat room, Donald Glover is going to be young Lando in the Han Solo movie.
Yes, I see that in the on Facebook.
Is that sources say or like studio announcement?
No, it's from StarWars.com.
Nice.
Mm.
Donald Glover cast as young Lando Calrissian in upcoming Han Solo.
Thank you,
Star
Lynn.
Wars.
Yeah, she's got the eye on
it. You can't trust that fanfic site.
Yes, who's at StarWars.com?
Who squatted on that domain?
Right. Just a bunch of Nelly fanfic.
There it is.
Danny Glover. Now, that would be quite...
I said, when this rumor first came out on Current Geek, I said Danny Glover instead of Donald. Caused some very embarrassing confusion.
There it is. Danny Glover.
Donald Glover cast as young Han Solo.
I hope he acts like Troy.
I hope he acts like Billy Dee Williams.
Oh, yes. Well,
Billy Dee Williams beats Troy.
It's going to be a mixture of Troy and Billy Dee Williams. What happened to old Landau? He's not playing Martin Landau.
Yeah, not Landau. Landau is, well, that guy passed away.
Martin Landau. What a strange casting for that. Danny Glover to play Martin Landau?
I really want to see Martin Landau Calrissian now.
Oh man, now I want to draw that. It could be the Martin Landau from Ed Wood.
Yes.
You know what? They could totally do like a campaign with like a car manufacturer. You know what a Landau top is, right? On the old 70s, early 80s Detroit.
What is a Landau top?
So basically, it was a vinyl cover for the roof of the car to make it look like it was a convertible, but it wasn't.
Okay, yeah.
And so you could do that. You could have a Landau top haircuts too. And so you could kind of do all these things related to that with the word Landau. Landau.
I'm gonna draw Martin Landau Calrissian this weekend.
Please do. I cannot.
I'll
wait
put
to
it
see.
On Instagram. It'll be one of my Inktobers.
Yeah, there you go.
It'll be part of a series that lasts 20 years. Right? Wasn't Martin Landau in? Wasn't he in the Law and Order? Or no? I'm thinking
no.
Yeah, no.
Martin Landau wasn't in that. He was in Mission Impossible.
No. He did another TV show. Oh, wait, that's TV. No,
if only we had an internet movie database where we could look
Hold
these
on,
sorts of things
I'm
up.
Hold on, I'm looking. I'm looking. No, Spider-Man.
My God, they're carrying it. It went from Steve Martin Landau Calrissian to Rick Steves Martin Landau Calrissian.
Steve Martin Landau.
Steve Martin.
Steve Martin Landau Calrissian. So he's dressed up like Lando, but it's Martin Landau's head, and he has an arrow through his head.
Yeah.
Steve Martin Landau Calrissian. I gotta draw that right now.
Do you feel the social responsibility of the internet, Len?
Oh, that's so funny.
Rule 34 coming on.
Yeah, big time.
That's so funny. Steve Martin. I know exactly what it's going to look like, too. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be a thing of beauty. Thank you, everybody in the chat room. That's wonderful.
Oh, just to reference something earlier, here is what the original kind of denim tuxedo looked like.
Nice. That's styling. Oh, nice.
Levi's actually made a tuxedo jacket for Bing Crosby because the hotel he was checking into wouldn't let him in because he wasn't dressed high class enough. And so they made one, and this riveting right here is made from the Levi's rivet in the middle and then the Levi's tag arranged into little
but flag. Wait a minute, so that sounds like a BS story, because if you're at a hotel and they won't let you check in because you're not dressed well enough, you don't have time for Levi's to go design and create a suit for you.
Well, no, I mean, they eventually let him in, but he was a little
so after that story got out, they made one
for yes him. Okay. Exactly. Right. So there's a picture of him, Bing Crosby, with the tux. And they're gonna bring it back. So
ding,
there.
Ding, ding.
Just a little cultural 411. Martin Landau from Space 1999. Oh, I hated that show.
I love Space 1999.
So are you on the show next week, Darren?
I do not believe so.
I was going to say, you should wear your jean jacket next week.
I have you down.
You have me down, then you have me down.
Okay.
Sure. This is not an endorsement, but I did just learn of the CanadianTuxedo.com, which has a fine selection of denim bow ties and other ties.
Ah. See, I don't have a jean jacket anymore. Maybe I need to reacquire one.
Yes, you should.
Is that what we're all going for Halloween?
Yes. Yes, it's going to be 1990, circa 1992 us.
I'm Bing Crosby in my Canadian tuxedo.
I'm Bing Crosby. Have you seen my Tennessee waterfall?
Man, okay, like Bing Crosby, that's a name some people are like, who's that? A dear friend of mine who shall remain nameless but does the show on Mondays, was taking a SQL course recently, and the teacher used REM as an example for something, and one guy was like, REM, who's that? And the teacher's like, oh, is it a band, you know, Shiny Happy People, Losing My Religion? The guy's like, no. So the person unnamed who hosts on Mondays turned to the person next to her that she was partnered with and goes, you know who REM is, don't you? And the partner said, no.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Wow.
And then she knew she was old.
The moment when the millennials get you with the not knowing your references.
Wow. Well, I mean, how can you not know REM?
I mean, obviously, it's a remark. It's used to make a comment so that the compiler doesn't execute.
Oh, I'm sure that must be what they were going over at the time. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
But then he made a joke about REM.
And they're like, "Who's that? What's REM?"
Michael Stipe, I Am Superman, Life's Rich Pageants.
No, I understand. Ian's like, you don't need to be secret about it. She posted it on Twitter. That's why I'm being funny and not saying Veronica's name. Oh,
out the bag.
Here's a little REM. This is why that kind of stings for me. In college, I did an REM marathon. We played 18 hours of REM straight.
Did they have enough albums?
I had to replay their. I played their entire back. This was 1991, 1990. So I played their entire album. Then I had some live stuff. I played some interviews, and then I played. And then for the last couple hours, it was all just requests. Anything you wanted to hear. So
What was the album that Losing My Religion was on?
That is. Oh my gosh.
Was it called Losing My Religion?
No.
Yeah, I just want to go to SoundCloud right
time.
Now. Spotify.
Out of time. Yeah.
Out of time.
I broadcast live from the Out of Time release at Record Bar.
Record Bar. Is that
REM isn't on Spotify, huh?
And
they are, but
what was funny is like this. That was what 90.
That was 91.
Yeah. And I remember we were making a big deal out of the people who were buying the vinyl instead of the CDs. I'm like, how retro they were being. Like,
yeah.
We don't have those for very much longer.
I had REM on cassette tape. I bought Reckoning on cassette tape. I used to listen to that in my little Chevy Nova.
Little? Oh, wait, were you driving the old Chevy? No, not the old one.
No, it was a little. It was a new Chevy Nova.
From the 80s.
85 Chevy Nova.
REM is one of those bands that really, when I listen to it, all I think is college radio.
Yeah, very much.
You can't listen to it and not think, oh, this was like.
Especially the early, like the first two or three albums.
I love them. It was an acquired taste, though, because I've had a friend of mine says, I gave him some REM albums. I'm like, hey, listen, these are really good. He's like, yeah, it's pretty good. It's good music to clean your room to. And that's always been like the benchmark for if you think a band is not as great as your friend thinks it is, it's good music
to clean your room to.
Clean your room to it.
Wow.
I give it a 55.
It's like a backhanded compliment.
I know. I'm like, really? I was so upset. I'm like, really? You didn't like REM?
Yeah, it's like that DTNS podcast, man. That's a great
one. It's okay. It's good to clean your room, too.
It's good to do some housework, too.
Yeah.
As long as you support the show, we're happy with whatever activity you do while listening to DTNS. Yeah,
Send us a picture of yourself cleaning your room while listening to DTNS.
Please be clothed in the picture. Let me just add that, Tom.
What are you doing listening to DTNS? You lining up for 2-4 left? I wonder how many other pilots there are. Do they all get to be the other pilots?
There's at least 3 that we've read emails from.
The high-flying show.
Tis.
With that, I will see you all next week, as it turns out.
Yes, I'm sorry this is taking so long to export today, but if you guys take off, I'm going to end our stream. So.
That's right.
Thanks, everybody.
Wear your jean jackets. Everybody, next week. Remember,
jean jackets next week, everybody. Okay, all right. We'll see you then. Okay, bye.
That to be blue denim?